Now that everyone's taking a step back, welcome back to the Purple Menace Podcast.
Take a step back into your earbuds and the magical world of the Purple Menace Podcast.
Yes, Billy Wessels, Clint Foster, we're here. Obviously the great tunes of Gary Patterson leading off the show. We kind of joked on Twitter this would be the new intro song, but figured why not? Tis the week. And it's a good message and everything else like that, so we'll get into the show. So obviously me and Clint are here as usual, but we're joined by... dare I say one of the most electric receivers in TCU history?
I think that's fair.
With some of the most exciting finishes to games in TCU history. We're joined by Josh Boyce today.
Ladies and gentlemen, your greatest 82 in TCU history.
Josh, how you doing, man?
Appreciate it. I'm doing good.
We kind of talked a little bit before, but tell people, what are you doing now? What's going on with you?
Just right now, you know, trying to get into the coaching thing. You know, probably have to start off at the high school level. And as far as what I'm doing right now, I'm just holding receiver camps for kids around.
And you're still in the area. You're in the Keller area, you said, right?
Right in the Keller area.
Yeah, so right around town, too. So you didn't get too far from home.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm actually 2 hours. You know, I grew up by the military base, Corpus Cove. So by Fort Hood down there. So, yeah, I'm not too far from home anyway, so.
Nice. Well, kind of, we mentioned off the top, one of the more electric players in school history, man. I was reminding myself, you had the West Virginia, like, crazy 94-yard touchdown with a minute and a half left. The two-point conversion there.
And overtime, yeah.
And overtime. And the two-point conversion at Boise, dude. Like, what do you remember about those moments?
Man, there was some good teams, man. It's funny because every time we go to West Virginia, no matter ranking or whatever it is, it's always a tough game for us. Always. I don't know if it's just the crowd or whatever it was, but for some reason that game, I mean, they had Tavon, Stedman, Gino on the other side. They were lighting the scoreboard up too. So, hey, we just came in and played the best we can and came out with the W.
Do you have a specific, like, favorite memory of your playing days at TCU?
Probably when we played Utah at Utah, just because it was game day. They had Lee Corso on them pick Utah to win, and then we came out. We pretty much blew them out within the first quarter, and I mean the game was over by then.
I think you beat them by like 40 or something. Yeah, that was a
beautiful day.
that was like our coming out. I mean, the team knew we were pretty good that year anyway, but that was pretty much like our coming out party. Show the world that we were really, really real.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned it earlier, man. Best 82 of all time. How do you feel about that? You think it's deserved?
Hey, I'm not one to toot my own horn, so. But I mean, I appreciate it. I don't know too many other 82s that was before me.
That's fair. But, I mean, it's a short, you know, list.
And the funny thing is, since I was number 5 in high school, coming out of high school, so I wanted number 5 going to TCU, but I knew I don't even know if the numbers retired or not anyway. But they weren't letting nobody wear number 5. So
yeah,
and
yeah.
It's funny. My red shirt year, I wore 83.
And that's right.
I switched. Who was 82? Was Shea 82?
I think Shea Reagan was 82.
Yeah, Shea was 82, and then when he left, that's when I got it.
Man, what are those conversations like about getting jersey numbers? Like when one comes up for grabs like that, do you have to fight somebody off? Do you have to buy someone meals at the?
It just depends. At that time, Curly was established at 85. Jimmy was already established. Twan Hicks was pretty much established, and then Clay and Bart they had the same number. So I kind of was just walking in, and that was kind of like one of the last numbers left. I think 85 was Brock, 86 was Corey. So that was pretty much the only one left, and then it just stuck with me the whole time.
Yeah, well, hey, it works out for you. Now you're on our list, you know? I have another question, though, about playing memories. So I can't remember if this was your senior year as well, but it was my senior year, 2012, same year as that West Virginia game that we were just talking about. Last game of the year against Oklahoma. You're going up for what should have been a game-winning touchdown pass. Yep. Was it or was it not pass interference on you on that play?
I will say it was pass interference, but at the same time, it did, as a receiver, it touched my hand, so I should have caught the ball. But I would definitely say it was a pass interference.
But Oklahoma gets all the calls anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we played bad that game anyway. We should have won that game, but it is what it is.
Indeed.
Well, now looking at the team now, what are some of the receivers that you're looking at on the roster that you see like a little bit of yourself in?
For sure, Jalen this past year, for sure. I saw a lot of myself in him as far as the same build. You know, big and can catch the ball and, you know, can make a lot of things happen that way. I like Tay. Tay Barber's gonna be a big one this year too, so I'm looking forward to see how good he plays this year.
Tell us about your time in the NFL. Speaking of Jalen Reagor, I mean, you had a lot of years there with the Patriots, obviously, and that machine going on up there. Yes. What was it like being a part of that organization? And, you know, a lot of people draw comparisons to Belichick and Coach P. I mean, do you see any similarities there, or what do you think?
Oh, my goodness, they were almost identical. It's crazy as far as, you know, the way they go about football, defense, just as far as carrying the team as a whole, they got a lot of similarities. You know, a lot of them.
Do you have a specific favorite memory from your time in the pros?
I mean, of course, the Super Bowl. And matter of fact, I'll even go back to it was. Let me see the practice. I think it was what day we played Sunday. It was the Friday practice, our last practice before we wrapped up to go for the game. And the play that Malcolm Butler picked the ball on, it's funny because Seattle, they hadn't run that play in I don't know how many years. And it was like they ran it a long time ago, like in week one or whatever it was. And we just so happened to run it that day in practice. And boom, to come to find out they run it in the game, Malcolm sees it, and that was the end of the game.
Yeah, for all of the hate that our offensive coordinators get, that's the worst offensive call in the history of football.
Man, it was crazy. We're already – it's crazy because when they caught that last ball and it was like 20 or 30 seconds left, we're already on the sideline like, all right, we're going to run this. This is what's going to happen, da-da-da, we got to do this. Like, we're already – we wasn't even expecting none of that. We thought it was going to run the ball because Marshawn was – he was killing us all game.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't breaking nothing crazy, but he was getting 5-6 yards a pop every time he carried the ball. So, yeah, that was so surprising to see that they didn't run the ball.
Everyone but Pete Carroll thought they were going to run the ball.
Oh, everybody. I know. I always wonder how come, like, when the play came in the huddle, how come Russ didn't change the play or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I've always had a theory that they wanted Russell Wilson to be the hero and not Marshawn Lynch.
True, yes. Yes. Yeah, definitely felt that way. So a little bit about that.
I think so, too. But, I mean, that moment, like, what's it like? I mean, I know it's no comparison, but the Super Bowl versus, like, playing at a West Virginia or at a Boise State, I feel like the atmosphere is always crazier at college than it is at a pro level.
Oh, maybe just because it was the Super Bowl and just the way it happened. I don't know. It's kind of just the way it happened that way. And it was kind of like, see, in West Virginia, it was a away game. So when we got that two-point conversion, it was just quiet and you just heard. That was cool because all you heard was the TCU fans in the corner, which was awesome because that's how we ran straight over there. That was awesome. But the Super Bowl is just different just because, and you know, everybody's watching this game. Everybody's the only, you know, it's the last game of the season. It's the big game. Everybody's watching. And then to win it that way was pretty crazy.
Well, you know, man, it just occurred to me, you were on the sidelines for two, both in your pro career and in your college career, for two massive defensive stops and huge games in which the other team should have run the ball. So I'm talking about like the Rose Bowl two-point conversion and that Malcolm Butler interception.
And that was crazy. And the funny thing about the Rose Bowl one is I'm looking at Tank the whole time, and I just so happened to see the tight end right behind him. Like, please, please. He just so happened to jump and knock the ball down. It was just crazy, and that was it on that one.
It's wild.
What is it like? Again, I'm a big fat white guy. I can't run very fast. What's it like running for like a 94-yard touchdown at West Virginia? Like, take me through that play because I still go back and I was freaking out when you were running it. I was like, what is that feeling like?
man, what was it? I think they had, matter of fact, they had sacked us, back to back down, so I think it was third and long. And then it was so loud in there, I forgot what play, whatever it was, but they were in pretty much in pre-man defense. They played cover two, tell the safeties, let nobody get behind them. So I'm running. I think I had a, go route or whatever it was. For basically, I was a decoy. Somebody else was getting it. So I was running, and he pushed me out. But I didn't, you know, I'm not thinking that. I didn't even think I went out of bounds, honestly. I think I tiptoed. I'm thinking I tiptoed the sideline. So then I guess they just, you know, forgot about me. I just waved my hand and Trey saw me at the last second, and then that was it.
I just pulled that play up on YouTube, and I'm watching now. How did you not go out of bounds right there?
Oh man, that's what I'm saying. I honestly, I think I did go out of bounds, but it was a force out, so I could touch the ball.
It was a 2nd and 19 play. So
that's what it was. That's, oh man, by then I think, what was it? It was late fourth quarter, huh?
Minute 40 left when the play started.
It was so loud in that stadium because I think Tavon had just returned the punt, the score before for them. He just returned that punt return. Yeah, it was crazy loud in there.
Oh, in that Utah game, you had a 93-yard touchdown in that one, huh?
Yep, 93, and the first one at the beginning, the slant and go. Man, but that team was so – we were so veteran and so well-prepared for that game. It was crazy.
Yeah, actually, if you watch back that Utah clip, or there was another angle of it that they used in the hype video for 2011 on Josh's touchdown, you can see me pumping my fist on the sideline.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Why
you? That team has so many weapons, man. You can pick and choose whoever you wanted to give the ball to.
I just like how that corner started up on you and then gave you 10 yards of space.
On the which one?
The Utah one.
The 94 one or the first one?
The 93 one against Utah.
Oh yeah. He started on. But see, we were. They played. They thought we were going to run. We was only at one receiver. So
yeah,
man, it's funny. We used to run that play a lot in practice.
Man, and the West Virginia game. Yeah, he was bumping you the whole time.
People forget about that.
They were calling it bounce, but they didn't.
People forget about that West Virginia game, though, in 2012. That was an amazing game with some really cool moments.
Yes, it was. It was a crazy game. Then it was a lot of offense in that game too.
Yeah,
man. I mean we stood up when we had to on defense, but I mean that's the year Tavon, Geno, and Stedman Bailey were going crazy the whole year.
I gotta go back and watch that game again. For sure.
Yeah. But look, I mean. Yeah, but I just can't wrap my head around what's it like running that fast. Like, what? How fast can you run? Like, what's your?
I went at the combine. I went 4.35.
Jeez, Louise.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I don't know, man. I don't even think I was just thinking. I was just like running, like, please, just don't let him catch me. Don't let him catch me. Because I honestly think I was a little winded from the play before, because I think I had ran a deeper route and we had got sacked. And then we was in hurry-up mode, so I had to run all the way back to the line of scrimmage, and we just called the play on the line, and that just so happened to be like that. And it's funny because if you notice, when I scored, I was so tired, I looked back. I didn't even celebrate. I looked back just to make sure it was no flags or anything so we could to make sure we had no points.
Yeah, you're like, I see you look straight back. And then is that Trevon hugging you right at the beginning? Like, was he the first one there?
No, I think it was either
Brandon Carter.
It was Brandon Carter.
Brandon Carter or Ladarius Brown. One of them were over there.
That's crazy, man. Everything else going okay with you right now? I know it's kind of a weird time in the world right now.
Yeah, it's all good, man. Just staying safe, staying out the way. You know, ain't trying to get into too much. It is a lot going on right now.
Yeah.
Hey, one more question for you, Josh. Coming up next year, so like everyone knows, last year didn't turn out the way we wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
We brought Meech back now. We got Jerry Kill in the fold. Mm-hmm. Got another year under Max Duggan's belt. What are your expectations for next year for the Frogs?
Man, I think we're going to be all right. You know, I teach you, we ride. I always say we ride on the quarterback. And, you know, Max is only going to get better. He's gonna, you know what I'm saying? He had a lot more time to develop. He got some more weapons that's grown up, and I think they're gonna flourish. You know, and we got you know, Meacham back, that's another big part. So, you know, we can get up tempo, get the ball, you know, like when Trey and J Dot and Kobe had that thing, had the offense going crazy. So, you know, maybe we can get back to that, you know, high tempo. running a lot of plays, a lot of yards. You know, giving Max, he don't got to think too much about his reads or anything. You know, he's just getting same height, getting the ball out. You know, we keep going to the next play.
What do you think about Zach Evans coming to TCU? First five-star recruit.
That's big, man. That's big. I mean, I don't know Zach. I don't know the whole details of how he got there or anything like that. But that's a big start, you know. As far as, especially if he comes in right away and plays and does and really contributes to the team, it's going to be a lot more kids starting to, you know, look at TCU, because we're not technically a big school, but you know they see us up there in the rankings every year, and you know what I'm saying, we're not as big as all these other schools.
Well, speaking of him, what was your recruitment like?
Man, you know, that's funny, because it wasn't as big as far as, see, I went to school with RG3 and Tanner Brock, and those two had all the offers. So basically, like, every time, like, scouts and stuff, they were coming to see them play, I just knew if I did what I had to do in the game, you know, they'd just see me. And then, you know, a lot of kids go to the camps and stuff like that, so I wasn't doing that. I went to one camp with the Baylor camp, and then I went to TCU. I had a TCU camp, an individual workout camp, and they offered me right there. So they offered me, and then SMU offered me, and then the day I signed with TCU, that's when Baylor offered me. They wanted me to go with Rob or RG3, but it was too late by then.
Man, if they had come a couple days earlier, would you have gone to Baylor?
I don't know, man. I don't know, especially the way that offense was going. But, you know, all my boys and stuff was going to TCU. I probably would have stayed with TCU. But the way that offense was going was crazy, especially for, because if you know, they had Kendall come out, then they had Terrence come out. They had a whole bunch of receivers that was going in and out of there, you know, and their numbers were crazy.
Man, well, luckily the Lord doesn't tempt us with more than we can bear, and you ended up in the right place.
Yeah, no, I'm glad. I wouldn't change it for nothing. I'm glad. Everything I've been through at TCU, I'm glad I chose it. Glad I chose the school.
Awesome, Josh. We really appreciate your time, all right, and stay well, okay?
Oh, man, appreciate y'all for having me.
Yeah, good talking to you, man.
All right, no, good talking to you, too.
Man, Josh Boyce.
That dude's got a million-dollar smile, by the way.
Oh, for real. That's funny. I'm looking at his Rivals profile because I was pulling it up. I was like, he looks like such a – again, he's a baby there. Yeah. But look how young he looks in that picture.
So young and so serious in
so
that picture.
Very serious. Man, that's crazy. I didn't realize that Baylor offered him, like, the on-signing day.
Yeah, that's wild.
And who does Baylor think they are?
Yeah, a bunch of jerks.
But like you had, like he said, they were there looking at RG3 the whole time. How do you not see Josh Boyce sitting there?
Yeah, I know. It would seem so obvious. And it's funny because, you know, he talks about like RG3 and Tanner Brock were the main guys in his class. And obviously, you know, Tanner was really huge for us before he had to leave too soon. But yeah, it is crazy to think like, man, I mean, Cooper Scove was really good back then.
Oh, they're great.
With the Brock brothers and RG3 and Josh Boyce.
No, they were going, I think, State Final Four every year pretty much. Yeah. It was crazy.
But it is wild to think like, man, how did he get kind of missed in all of that?
Because again, he did... Because he had just the TCU and SMU offers, and it all came pretty late till signing day.
Yeah.
So, crazy.
Maybe it's something about Josh Boyce, because, I mean, he's one of the best TCU receivers in TCU history for sure, but it feels like people forget him in the conversations a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Josh Doctson is the easy number one, you know, and people talk about, like, oh, yeah, Jeremy Curley, Jalen Reagor, and it's like, well, hey, what about Josh Boyce? Let's talk about Josh Boyce. This dude put his team on his back a couple times.
Those moments he had, like the West Virginia one, I remembered watching that and freaking out, because I was taking that was the sixth win that year in the first year in the Big 12 since TCU to a bowl game. So that was crazy. And obviously the win at Boise was one of the biggest wins in school history.
Oh, yeah.
It's a top 10 win.
Oh, yeah. And if I may be just completely blowing smoke out of my backside, but because I haven't watched that West Virginia game in a little while. But I feel like that 2-point conversion he got was the exact same play as that we ran against Boise.
Oh, it probably was.
Yeah. And just the same where it's just like you give it to JB and he just makes an inhuman effort after the catch.
Muscle someone off of
it. Yeah, just get over the goal line, which is awesome.
Crazy, crazy. But yeah, good. I mean, Josh Boyce, awesome dude, and happy to get a hold of him. Good job on that, Clint.
Yeah, well,
you track that down. I guess we'll get into how has your week been now that we got...
Yeah, yo, been pretty good. Been pretty good. I was in Houston at the beginning of the week working on a project. It was, again, I was the work crew out there, and my God, it's hot in Houston. It was so humid, and I was sweating profusely, and You know, you forget how hellish it is down there.
Yeah, I try to avoid there at all costs. But yeah, it's been a tough time in the world. So
yeah,
we were trying to get Chris Gardner on today. Might be able to get to talk to him here in the next couple of days, and we'll get maybe a special edition of the podcast to get his take on everything. Because, you know, I mean, he's very opinionated.
I'm sure he's got takes on takes on takes.
He's got takes on everything, but also he's a crazy smart guy.
Yeah,
like you think he's just funny and got the $1 million smile like Joy, like Josh, but wildly intelligent because he's a stand up comic. One of my idols there, I say, is KG.
Yeah, yeah. Well, man, it's been too long since we've had KG on here. So, yeah, we definitely got to get him soon.
So, you might get a random special edition next week of the podcast. So, but on to this week's show. Talk a little bit of recruiting right now. A couple new baseball commits in the fold. We'll go through the rest of the numbers, 81 through 90, that you guys got. And then Twitter questions. So,
yeah.
Let's start with some recruiting. Ketron Jackson, his top seven came out the other day. 4-star receiver from Royce City, 6'1", 190. Top seven is TCU, A&M, SMU, Arkansas, Oregon State, Colorado, and Texas. So you can kind of filter out a couple of those right away.
Beavers are an interesting throw in there.
Oregon State is kind of known for, I'm not going to say throwing offers at everybody because that sounds rude, but they're usually first everybody because everyone has an Oregon State offer nowadays. So, yeah. I mean, they're – which if you're them, you pretty much have to. You have to just throw them at everyone. So, and they were probably the first one to offer him, so he's keeping them in there till the end just out of respect, I guess.
Well, and I'm sure their pitch to him is, hey, remember when we had Chad Johnson? That was the thing that happened?
Yeah, remember – I'm trying to think who else – didn't they have a good quarterback for a while?
I mean, they've had a couple of good players. Yeah. I mean, it's been a while, but there for a while they did.
Didn't Travoris –
they had Jakiz Rogers, I know. That was when we played him in 2010.
Didn't Travoris Johnson finish his career there?
I think that's true. Yes.
So, yeah. Yes. But yeah, and
Travorosaurus.
Travorosaurus. I loved watching him run. Just wish he could have hung on to the ball a little bit more. But but weirdly enough, I think the top two for him are TCU and Arkansas, trying to stay pretty close to hereby. That doesn't make any sense. Pretty close to home.
Close to hereby.
But yeah, I think those are your top two for him. It'll be an interesting race down the line. If you could throw in another 4-star receiver after getting Quentin Johnston last year.
Yes, please.
Yeah, Hugh boy.
Yes,
so this
please.
Offense is making a turnaround and quickly. And then another 4-star that got offered this week is, I'm going to mess up the name, Taiolai Sevilla, 4-star defensive end / offensive tackle. He's 6'5", 250, so I think he'll play defensive end at the next level, but he plays both for his high school in Las Vegas. He's got every Pac-12 school offered. I think right now the favorite is USC, but TCU offered him as long as Oklahoma, Miami, Florida State, and LSU. So some big offers for him. TCU throwing their hat in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, why not? he'd be a great one to have in the fold, for sure.
Yep. And then a couple new baseball commits. And I think there are a couple more that haven't announced their commitment yet. We saw Slosh on Twitter saying Frogs up 4 times the other day. So there's two that I've found so far. Maybe you've seen a couple others that I missed. But Carson Bowen, a 2022 catcher from Anaheim, on perfectgame.com, he's rated as a 9.5 out of 10. Basically, I was reading the breakdown of it. 9 means your potential top 10 round draft pick. That sounds like a pretty wide gap, but in baseball, that's huge.
Yeah, he's a half point away from Bo Derek. Right?
Yeah, there you go. And 10 means you're a very high draft pick, an elite college prospect. So this guy's in that elite range. Probably could be better than Zach Humphries as far as like catching skills and talent. He's also a pitcher, but I think he'll come in and play catcher here.
I'm in favor of him coming to TCU.
There you go. Good.
Hot take.
Hot take. A really good prospect coming here. And then another guy is a 2023 pitcher from Argyle, so just down the road, Pierce Bowles. So he's an 8.5 prospect, but he's also just finished his freshman year where he got to play a couple weeks and then his freshman year got ended. Fastball hits 88. As a freshman, that's crazy. That means that's projectable, like probably low 90s by the time he puts a little bit of more mass on him. So,
my gosh. He's at 8.5 as a freshman.
As a freshman, yeah. So this is a guy that could be a 4 or 5 star essentially in football terms when all said and done. And they were raving on Perfect Game about his slider. So if you get a guy that can touch mid-90s with a fastball, then with a wipeout slider,
dude,
filthy.
Forget it.
Filthy. Again, just a freshman in high school, so keep an eye on him. For the years to come. So some good recruiting news this week.
Yeah, really good recruiting news.
So, man, I miss baseball. We have a Twitter question coming up a little bit later about grass, if you will. And so I just want to I miss it. Makes me miss baseball.
Yes, man. We have got to please. I know that there are so many Major League Baseball owners that listen to the Purple Menace podcast. Figure it out, y'all. Come on. We need some baseball in our lives.
Yeah, I think they will. Everything sounds like it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just the eternal optimist thinks they'll still figure out something. At this point, I was hoping for a July 4th opening day. That probably won't happen.
Yeah.
But maybe mid-July. Or maybe a birthday present for me in late July. So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, let's make it happen.
Speaking of birthday presents, we've been giving birthday presents to the Big Boy Summers.
Yes.
All year. So,
Hashtag Big Boy Summer.
We've got the O-line tournament going on now.
Yes.
It's been a lot more attention to that than I thought there would be.
Yeah, and a lot more with the exception of the 8-9 matchup, which is what you would expect to be pretty close. Been a lot of lopsided votes far in the first round.
That's kind of to be expected, but also the more recent years with people know the players a little bit more familiar with are playing a big factor there. But yeah, some big boys are getting involved in it, which I need to send a couple apologies out. We put Patrick Morris there in 2017 while he played. He only played about half the season.
Yeah.
We left out Cordell Awagwu, who started every game that season. So apologies to Cordell.
Yes, my deepest, sincerest apologies.
We'll get that flipped. And then spelled Kellen Hollins' name wrong. And he reminded me we got to throw an extra L in his first name.
So
he's got two L's in there. So here's our apologies. We'll correct that going forward.
I worked so hard on those graphics.
And I didn't want to tell you because you worked crazy hard on these.
I worked so hard on these graphics.
And then,
so many mistakes.
And then some people want pictures. And it's hard to get pictures.
I am sorry. There's a few people that didn't have pictures. I searched so long.
Yeah.
In my spare time. Between working 16-hour days and trying to find these pictures. And I mean, Brady Berick was one that got a lot of attention. I could not, for the life of me, find a picture of Brady Berick. And I even went back. I watched the galleryfurniture.com bowl, which, is basically strapping yourself up to a torture device, to go back and relive that, which is where I found the screen grab of Jamal Powell. I screenshotted that. But I was like, I ran back so many little moments in that video trying to be like, oh, can I get him here? Can I get him there? And it's like, oh, no, he's awkwardly sideways or he's blurry or he's, I can see his eyebrow. You know what I mean? He's partially obscured. So, I did the best I could.
What can you do with some of these? Some of these things, that's just impossible in this day and age.
Yeah.
These things, so.
Did the best I could. But, hopefully people are at least enjoying it.
I get a lot of positive feedback. Someone asked for kickers next. I don't know if we're going
to. Dude, okay. I was like, that's actually kind of a fun idea.
That would be fun. I'm not going to say any names. But where will some people be seated? Okay, we'll see.
Well, I feel like with that, you wouldn't necessarily do every single kicker from the Coach B era. But, you've got, between Jaden Oberchrome, Nick Brown was a really, really great one. Jonathan Song. We've had some really solid kickers.
Yeah, I think Oberchrome wins that in a landslide.
But Nick Brown should. And Chris Manfredini. Chris Manfredini was awesome.
I think Nick Brown's your two and Song might be your three.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Chris Manfredini might be your three.
Manfredini's up there, yeah.
He didn't miss a single kick in 2006, I don't think.
Oh, really?
Or, you know what? I think I remember. He got a story written about him in the Startlegram. It was he's perfect for his career. And then he missed the next kick he took. But, the thing about a kicker bracket is it would be a shame not to include Mike Reeder in that. Because that's another guy who deserves some consideration for one of the best kickers of all time. The only Lou Groza Award winner in TCU history from the late 90s.
Manfredini was 13 for 13 in 05, but 40 of 44 in extra points.
In 05.
So he missed four extra points, but not a single field goal, including...
Wait, in 05? Peter Lococo was the kicker in 05.
They split.
Yes.
No, I think Manfredini, they gave the shorter kicks to
Lococo. Right.
And then Manfredini in 06 was 12 of 14 and 36 of 41 on extra points.
Yeah.
And then 07, and 07 was 22 of 27 on field goals, including a long of 51, a career long, but it was 37 for 37 extra points. So, man, what a career he had.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was there. He was there basically my years. I met him as a freshman, and we were both freshmen at the same time. So, me and Manfredini need to go back. Yeah, Lococo had a wild ride, too, if I recall.
Yes.
His stats.
Yes.
I remember my first game as a student was against Northwestern. in 04.
Oh, yeah? That was a wild game.
That was a wild game.
It was a fun game. I remember that game.
Yes. So.
And after we won that game, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a good year. I got a good feeling about it.
And then no. Well, I'm trying to remember how that, because we won that game. I want to say it was an overtime.
It was definitely an overtime, yeah.
Northwestern TCU overtime. Let's see, Lococo had a 41-yarder. No, it was 48-45 in overtime. I feel like the kickers were... Yeah, Northwestern missed 5 field goals that game.
Oh, my gosh.
I remember kickers being a very iffy thing, including one in overtime that set up the game winner.
That is so brutal. I mean, yeah. it's just like us in 08 at Utah, right? Where you're just up there and you're like, this game, we should win this game, and we keep missing field goals in a one-score game. Like, oh, that's just brutal.
I'm trying to see all the kickers for that game. Let's see, where are they at? Because B. Huffman went 1-for-6. Lococo went 2-for-3, and then also 4-of-5 on extra points.
Mm.
And Huffman went 6-for-6 on extra points. TCU won the game 48-45, my very first game as a student.
Nice. And then
in double overtime, the teams combined for 3 points in double overtime.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I remember it. I remember it being like a cardiac game. It was super stressful.
It was crazy. But yes, so a kicker bracket could be fun.
Yeah, I would like to do more of these position brackets. I mean, I think it's fun, especially, you know, with Coach P era, because, you know, these are the players that everyone remembers so well from the last 20 years. And, you know, you don't have to get into conversations of like, you know, like if you're having a quarterback bracket for all time, you don't have to be like, oh, well, you know, Sammy Baugh has, you know, he revolutionized the game, but what would he do in today's game and blah, blah, blah. You know, it gets hard to compare. But when you're talking about all from the last 20 years, it's really easy to say this or that.
Yeah, so in the first overtime, I'm still amazed by this box score. I'm a big nerd. Lococo's attempt in the first overtime for the winner got blocked, and then he made it in the second overtime, and Northwestern missed in the second overtime to win the game. So, yes, crazy game, crazy time. But, yeah, we're doing fun stuff. Obviously, the baseball uniform bracket's going strong. All the favorites are going on there. No surprise there. The ones and twos are going ahead. So we'll continue that on Monday, and we'll get back to the big boys later next week. So.
Yeah, more big boys. That'll be your weekend treat.
Hashtag big boy summer. Every weekend should be some of the big boy.
Yes.
As a big boy myself. all right. Best 81 through 90.
Yes.
In TCU history.
All right.
I didn't realize this. I was doing some research because I do that from time to time.
research?
The guy for 81 was the first TCU player to do this one thing. But we got to give our honorable mentions first.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, it is still Big Boy Summer. Let this not distract you from the fact that it's Big Boy Summer. But we are making a decided move away from the big boys here in these 80s. And as you would expect, giving a lot of wide receiver love, just like our boy Josh Boyce, who we just got off the phone with. Your honorable mentions for 81. First of all, Morris Bailey deserves some honorable mention. He was a end or, you know, a predecessor to a wide receiver in the 40s, 46 to 49. Lindy Berry's favorite target. We've mentioned Lindy Berry a lot in this list. He was all Southwest Conference in 1948 and 1949. And he, as a sophomore, he had 12 receptions in a game, which was nuts for the 40s.
Yeah.
Very, very big ups to him. Also, Cole Hunt. You might remember Joey Hunt's younger brother and went on to play in the short-lived XFL revival. But Cole Hunt was a great weapon while he was here at TCU. But your best 81, it's got to go to, as long as we're talking about 2004 and 2003, Reggie Harrell, man.
I was a big Reggie Harrell fan. I thought he was underappreciated, and I was thinking underutilized, and I look at his stats and go, oh, he was the first 1,000-yard receiver in TCU history.
First 1,000-yard receiver in TCU history, yes. And just... I mean, you talk about a fun player to watch back then in those Conference USA days. Go-to guy in that offense. And you can imagine everyone's excitement going into 2004 when you're looking at Reggie Harrell and Corey Rogers on opposite sides of the field from one another, thinking like, oh, this is unbeatable, right? But
it was beatable.
Record scratch. Yes. You might be wondering how we got here. Unfortunately, it was not. But Reggie Harrell was a great one, and definitely one that a lot of the young bucks may not know the name, but if you don't know, now you know.
Yep.
82, of course, we mentioned Josh Boyce, your best 82 of all time. But your honorable mention 82, got to go to Bobby Engram. And I'll pull up to you what Dan Jenkins had to say about, or it's not Bobby, excuse me, Brian Engram. He was an end for the Frogs in 53 to 55. He was all Southwest Conference And he was actually the team MVP, Dan Rogers team MVP in 1955. So, you know, definitely deserving of some honorable mention. You know,
pretty good, huh?
You know. you're number 83 now, which, as JB was saying, was his original number before it ended up on the chest of Jonathan Jones, if I remember correctly. Shout out Jay Jones if you're listening to the Purple Menace podcast. But your best 83 of all time goes to Bruce Alford, and for the Frogs, 1940 to 1942. And again, I'll read you what Dan Jenkins has to say about
it. Dan Jenkins wrote a very lengthy a lengthy review of his career, at least for one big game he had.
Yes. So Dan Jenkins writes, "Not often does a team lose by double digits, yet boast the best player on the field. But such was the case in the 1942 Orange Bowl. Alford, who also wore number 30, was active on offense, defense, and special teams, catching two touchdown passes, blocking a punt, and, according to the account of the Star-Telegram the next day, making the most vicious tackles on the field. A two-time All-Southwest Conference selection in 1941 and 42, Alford was the Frogs' leading receiver in 41 and the Dan Rogers team MVP in 1942. So, there you go. You get one. You get some. You get a Dan Rogers team MVP, two All Southwest Conference selections, and the game of a lifetime, and what was unfortunately a loss to Georgia, if I remember correctly.
Double digit loss.
Yeah. Then that'll get you some. That'll get you some recognition on our list. Absolutely.
I wasn't around for that. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with anything Dan Jenkins says.
You weren't around for that?
I am older. I'm not quite that old.
You're like slightly older than me.
Yeah, but I feel way older.
Yeah. So we've been talking a lot about ends in the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. How about some tight ends in the modern era? The tightest of all of them. Mm-hmm. Honorable mention 84. You got to mention Evan Frosch,
yep.
Tight end on that Rose Bowl team and the successful years before that. But your best 84 of all team tight end Cody McCarty, who, if I remember correctly, passed away pretty suddenly a few years back. Am I remembering that right?
I don't remember that, but
maybe I'm saying something completely off base, and Cody McCarty's listening, or his brother-in-law's listening, and he's like, "Hey, what the heck? Like, he's alive." I think I remember that.
Yeah, it looks like in 2011 he had a heart attack.
I thought it was something sudden and tragic.
He was a Mantle Timberview assistant football coach.
Yes. Okay, but. So, yes, RIP to Cody McCarty, but before he was a coach in Timberview, who was a great tight end for the Frogs in those same Conference USA years as Reggie Harrell, 2001-2004, he was, that go-to guy in the tight end spot. When you can't find Reggie Harrell or Corey Rogers, you're going to look for Cody McCarty in the red zone. His best year was his senior year in 2004 when he caught 17 balls for 321 yards and two scores and was first-team All-Conference USA. Started 21 games to end his career and finished with 39 receptions, 636 yards, and four touchdowns. So, you know, you might look at those numbers and say, underutilizing a tight end is not a new thing for TCU. But Cody McCarty, he was a big threat in the red zone and was a beloved Frog by all.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I didn't realize he had passed away.
Yeah, I thought I had remembered hearing that, so I'm glad I wasn't completely off base.
It obviously wasn't him, but I remember I was covering a game for the Star-Telegram at the time. It must have been around there. Maybe it was a little bit later than that. It wasn't him, but I got a coach had a heart attack on the sideline, like right as the game ended.
Oh, are you talking about in the 70s for TCU?
No. I'm talking about like in the last 15 years.
Oh.
10 years when I was covering games for the Star-Telegram. Like I watched.
Oh my God!
I was down on the field, looking like interviewing players and stuff after the game, and the coach standing about as far away from me and you right now grabbed his chest and dropped to his knees. I like waved for the paramedics to come over, and there was an ambulance there. They ran him over. Yeah, that was crazy.
Billy, you've experienced some traumatic things.
I've experienced some things, man. Again, I'm an old man. They got more stories if we got time for it.
That's wild, man. And for those of you listening, no, we're not 6 feet apart right now.
we're not socially distanced. It's a solid yard.
Yeah, probably.
We're about a yard away.
Yeah, we're about 3 feet away. Yeah. But I thought you were. I was looking up my next round of notes, and
I was just thinking about the time I saw a coach at a high school football game have a heart attack on the sideline.
That's wild, man. Yeah. Well, because the TCU coach in the, I think it was Jim Pittman, I think was his name. He was going to be the coach before Jim Wacker. He was going to be the guy that turned TCU around,
yeah.
And at halftime. in a game against Baylor, he had a heart attack and died.
Wow.
And the Frogs, I can't remember if they ended up winning the game, like, you know, win one for the Gipper type thing. But it was extremely tragic, not only because, like, oh, crap, like, our savior coach is gone. It was like, oh, my God, this coach died in the middle of the game.
Yeah, today they would just cancel the rest of the game.
Yeah, for sure.
There's no way. Like, I couldn't imagine having to play it for that.
Oh, my God, yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
The coach from my story, he ended up being okay.
Like, oh, that's good.
Yeah, he ended up being okay. But I was like, they put him in the back of the ambulance, and then like an hour or so later, he came walking out of it. So
that's good. Yeah. That story has a happy
ending. It has a happy ending, yes. But like it was like I better tell how that story ended.
Yeah,
I don't remember what school or whatever, but it was a traumatic experience for me.
Man,
for sure.
Wild.
On to 85.
So honorable mention for you, Sonny Campbell. He was an in for the Frogs, 64-66. He was actually at the time that that Dan Jenkins was writing this in the early 2000s, he was 10th all time in career receptions, which is saying something in a run heavy offense.
Right.
And he actually, you know, so that was 100 career receptions for him in 1964-66, and he had 1,381 yards at that time. But your best 85 of all time.
No,
Jeremy Curley. Yeah. Clap. Yep. Yes. It's got to be Jeremy Curley. Dude, you want to talk about electric?
Yeah.
Jeremy, I mean, I will say that Corey Rogers was his predecessor as far as being that electric return man slash receiver. But Jeremy Curley took what Corey Rogers did and perfected it to an art form.
Mm-hmm. Well, the original Wild Frog came from Jerry Curley's athleticism. Again,
yes.
Hutto Hippo, pride of the Hutto Hippos.
Yes.
I remember, like, when I was working for the TCU student newspaper, getting him was a huge deal. Like, thinking about recruiting,
mm-hmm.
all this stuff back in, like, 2004 when they recruited him, I was like, oh my goodness, this guy's going to be a monster.
Oh, yeah.
And he was.
4-star, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I remember being so excited to get Jeremy Curley.
Yeah, I think, and if I remember correctly, was he in the same class as Jay Kavnis? That Jay Kavnis was the other, like, gem in that class?
Maybe. That sounds familiar.
I think so. But, of course, Jeremy Curley was the one who ended up being just an absolute star for the Frogs. You know, countless memorable plays, and like you say, the advent of the Wild Frog, which at the time was really awesome and worked really, really well.
Well, it also helps when you have a guy like Curley,
who
also played quarterback in high school.
Well, and we also had a lot more multiple looks out of it. It wasn't just dive right.
He was in the 07 class. I thought he was earlier than that. But either way.
Well, yeah, that's true, because his senior year was 2010.
8, 9, 10, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. 7, 8, 9, 10. But,
we know how to count here. Just proving to you guys.
We got a couple of journalism degrees between us and not a lot of math skills.
No, none whatsoever. But yes, just an electrifying. Just, I mean, he's got to be in the short list of best receivers. If we did a receiver bracket, he's going to be in the short list.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Team. For sure. He's easily top 10. Easily.
TCU all time? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Top 5, maybe even.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a tough conversation.
It's Dotson.
Doxon's number one. You got to get into a conversation between pure talent and stats as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Mike Renfro needs to be top 5.
Okay.
Personally.
I'm not gonna argue.
Mike Renfro's got to be up there. Josh Boyce, I think, is top 5. Jimmy Young. He's another one who's going to appear on this list a little later. He's very underappreciated.
No, he actually, like, he is probably the most underappreciated. But yes.
Yeah.
But Curley, crazy, crazy talented.
Yeah, for sure.
Is he still on the? Was he on the Niners last? On the Jets last? I think
he was. He's quite the journeyman in the NFL. Yeah, he was with the Jets for a long time. With the Niners, you can type it up and Google him. See.
Well,
where
yeah, I'm trying
right
to see
now.
If he's still kicking around.
I know he's got a clothing line currently.
I don't think. Yeah, he last played in 2018. He played one game in 2018 with the Bills.
Ah.
So he played for the Jets most from 11 through 15. Then with the Niners for 16, back in the Jets in 17, Bills in 18. So I think he's done.
So he's living his best retired life.
I don't blame him.
And hopefully coming up with the next generation of Frog stars with his track star TCU wife.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah.
True. He made a cool somewhere in the range of $40 million playing in the NFL. So
yeah,
no complaints here.
Yes. And has tattoos of flames going up his arms.
I wonder why. Is because he's fast?
Yeah, I think it's because he's faster than the average bear. Yes. So 86 for you now. Back to the tight ends. It's been too long since we've given the tight ends any attention in this list. Honorable mention goes to Corey Fuller. Josh Boyce mentioned him earlier. He was a solid tight end for the Frogs in my years. Great dude as well. But your best 86 of all time. Ever heard of a name, Kelly Blackwell?
I have heard that name.
Yes, yes. He was a tight end for the Frogs, 88 to 91. Those magical flying T years. And, dude, he was a weapon. He was a huge weapon for the Frogs. And one that's very beloved by a lot of TCU fans who remember watching him play. So he was an All-American in 1991. Didn't have a lot of those back then in those years. Two-time All-Southwest Conference, 1990 and 91. He was the... he had 181 receptions and 2,155 receiving yards in his career. So, you know, a lot more than a lot of other tight ends.
If we did a best tight end list, it's probably number one.
Probably number one. Probably Kelly Blackwell. I think Matt Schobel would be up there. Probably like your number two would be Matt Schobel.
Yeah.
Pro Wells. I like it. Pro Wells needs some love in that list.
Give him another year.
Yeah.
Let him get some stats.
Yeah, for sure.
But again, All-American here.
Yeah, All-American. Yeah, he's got to be your number one in that regard, for sure. Now, moving on to 87, right?
Yeah.
So, got to give...
Again, we're not good at math over here. Which, to point out how bad we are at math, I was like thinking about Jerry Curley's contract a little bit more. I looked it up. He's quote-unquote, only made about $12 million playing football. So I don't know how to math at all, but either way, still a great career for him.
That's a pretty high tax bracket.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, he's up there.
87. You know, we gotta give some love to Trevante Heights. I think as an honorable mention, 87. If for no other reason, that catch against Ohio State.
Catch against Ohio State was crazy.
That double coverage, triple coverage, whatever, should never have been thrown. ball that Trevante Heights finds a way to get up under.
What's
and catch.
What's funny is. Those were like his only catches. Like he caught 45 to 52 yard touchdowns were his only catches.
Yes, yes.
So
well, and so few and far between. It's he reminds me a lot in like, oh my god, I just lost his name. But early 2016, he was Kenny Hill's go to guy and against
Taj
Arkansas.
Taj Williams.
Yes,
Taj Williams.
Where Taj Williams, you're like, oh my gosh, this guy's amazing.
Well, he was.
And then
he was the number
where did
one,
he go?
He was the number one JUCO receiver in the country.
Yes,
and he got. 90% of his stats came in two games. It was against Grambling, whoever, and against Baylor. He had a monster game against Baylor.
No, I thought it was Oklahoma and Arkansas.
Was it? Whatever.
Yeah.
Either way.
I know Oklahoma was one of them.
He had a couple monster games, and that's where all of his stats came from.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's the same with Trevante Heights, where you find yourself sitting there and being like, well, where's that really awesome receiver that was catching those bombs?
But the thing about Heights is also he was so good on special teams.
Oh, he was.
Which is the reason he's on the Panthers now, honestly.
Yes.
Because he's a great special teams player.
Yeah.
So that's another... A quality that you look for in a Gary Patterson type player, somebody who doesn't do just their one thing well, they do everything well.
Yes, and not enough love is given to like the really solid special teams players in TCU history. I mean, hey, long before he was a Rose Bowl starting linebacker, Tanner Brock was a force on special teams. Mm-hmm. If any of you remember him eviscerating someone with his helmet off, I think it was against SMU.
I think it was. That does sound real familiar.
That was Jason Witten material, and it was on a punt play. If you will, think back and remember with me. But your best 87 of all time, got to go to Stephen Shipley. He was a wide receiver for the Frogs, 89 to 92, those Kelly Blackwell years. And again, very much like Trevante Heights, it wasn't so much that he had just eye-popping numbers his entire career. It was that he always showed up in huge moments for the Frogs. So he had two long touchdown catches and an upset of number 19 Air Force.
What a world.
Yeah, think about this topsy-turvy world for a second. TCU is upsetting number 19 Air Force.
Yeah, in 1990.
Yeah, this is kind of reverse of what was happening to the Frogs back in 2007. He also had a long touchdown against Texas to give the Frogs a lead as a senior in 1992. That was the last time that the Frogs... beat the Longhorns until 2012. Mm-hmm. He was all Southwest Conference in 1990. He was the team's leading receiver in 1992. 2,251 receiving yards in his career.
And that was at the time second most when he graduated. So.
Yes.
Yeah. and third, and at the time, third all time in catches and touchdowns too. But like again, those numbers have been skewed because of how football has been the last 5 years or so. But yeah, for what he did at the time, it was incredible.
Yes, absolutely. So that brings us now to 88, and you know, 88 is a very highly regarded number among my people, Cowboys fans, right? You know, we like to give it to
CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, whoever we think is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
because of Drew Pearson and Michael Irvin and Des Bryant, who lived up to the number.
Yeah.
But, you know, believe it or not, there have been a lot of really great 88s in TCU history.
Yeah, it's true.
Quite a few of them. Renoris Ray. Do you remember that name,
Bill? I do remember Ray Ray.
Yes, Ray Ray.
I liked Ray Ray.
He was a defensive tackle for the Frogs in those mid-2000s.
Another really good dude.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've never actually gotten to meet him.
He's a good dude, yeah.
Cam White, receiver for the Frogs in that 2012-2013 range. Had a couple of big plays in his career. Also, James Manis played on those same teams as Kenneth Davis in the mid-80s, those unbelievable Frogs. He was a really solid player for TCU back in those days. Also, Buddy Iles. You got to talk about Buddy Iles with 88. Speaking of Texas upsets, the famous cockroach game.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever TCU beat who was, I think it was number two or number one Texas at the time. Yeah. And Daryl Royal said that TCU is like a cockroach because they don't carry off anything of value. They just fall into things and screw it up. and Buddy Iles was on the receiving end of the lone touchdown of the game, or the game-winning touchdown. I think it was 7-6, if I remember the score correctly. And just Sonny Gibbs just threw a bomb to him that he just ran up under and took it to the house. Absolutely deserving of your 88 honorable mentions. But, you know, I spoiled it ahead of time. Your best 88 of all time. And, I mean, if it's possible, vastly underrated, Jimmy Young.
Yep. I think he is vastly underrated. I really do.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at, I'm reading his Go Frogs battle right now. Like, he was honorable mention on Mountain West, but he had, his best game was in the Rose Bowl. He had five catches in the Rose Bowl, which tied a career high. Also had five catches against Utah in that big win, too.
Mm-hmm.
So he stepped up in big games as well.
Yeah, you know, I think people forget about Jimmy because he wasn't necessarily always on the receiving end of, like, the big touchdown play. I mean, I can remember one against BYU in 2009 that was pretty huge. It was a glorious catch in the end zone. But usually he's just that guy who's just like, listen, I'm going to be your volume guy. I'm going to help you move the ball down the field. You can always depend on him to make the catch. Yep. He had the surest hands, I would say, of anybody on the team at the time that he played.
You could use some more Jimmy Youngs.
Yes, for sure. And another boot boy.
Another boot boy from Monroe.
And maybe, you know, maybe it's something with people. They see a guy from Louisiana and he's amazing at what he does and they're like, hey, let's give him honorable mention all conference. Right? Can we talk about this for a second? How Ardarius Washington is third team All Big 12?
Furious, right?
Third team? He's one of the best safeties in the nation.
Furious. He's, again, Pro Football Focus has the second best safety in the country.
Behind Javon Mary.
I get it if you're... I understand putting Stearns in there in your first
team. Sure.
I get it. He's great. He might be a first-round pick this year. Javon Mary also in there. They have two safeties or three safeties in the first team? Probably just two. So I can rationalize Ardarius being a second team. But third team, you never watched football.
Yeah.
You never watched.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not beyond the Big 12 to put an undeserving Texas defender above a very deserving TCU defender.
Don't get me started with Charles Omenihu versus Ben Banigou for Defensive Lineman of the Year.
There's literally no argument in favor of him.
The only thing is Omenihu had, I think, 1.5 more sacks than Banigou that year. Every other stat, Banigou beat him in. In the game where they played each other head-to-head, Banigou dominated. Omenihu had, four of his, 10 sacks that year came against Kansas. Whoop-de-freaking-do. I'm still pissed about that.
Because podcasting is a visual medium, I'm furiously shaking my head right now.
You
just
are.
In disgust.
And I'm wildly gyrating and furious about it.
Y'all are missing a show.
I'm going straight truffle shuffle on you guys. I will never let that one go.
Ugh.
I will never let that one go.
But you know what? I love it for a guy like Ardarius Washington because he's going to see that and be like, okay.
Cool.
He's going to go Michael Jordan and be like, that's all I needed.
Yeah. I'm going to go pick off 10 passes this year.
Yeah. So I dropped 50 interceptions on him.
His tweet was bet. So,
was it?
Yeah.
He
said, okay, bet.
I got to go like that immediately.
Him doing all the flips the other day?
Yes, I did see that.
There was a viral video of some dude near a lake or whatever on a trampoline, not even trampoline, on a mattress or whatever, did 17 flips. And then Ardarius like, oh, I can do that. And after working out with T-Hunt, They had a workout, and then he's like, "I hear it now. I'm going to do this." And he went up and down the field, basically doing flips. Ardarius is a freak. He's a freak of nature.
Love it.
Very talented. Whoever voted on this thing is wrong because I never got a ballot.
Nobody asked me.
Hopefully, we get our ballots soon. The Big 12 media days are usually in July. They'll be on the internet this year. There'll be a Zoom Big 12 conference meeting or whatever. But yeah, Ardarius got robbed.
Yeah,
Banigou got robbed.
Yeah,
Jim Young robbed.
Absolutely.
At least we gave Jim Young this.
yeah. Jimmy Young, you're getting some love on our list. Yes. So that's all that really matters. I mean, you know, these are the type of honors that you can treasure in your heart.
Yes, I'm sure
and take with you for the rest.
He doesn't care about this. He's not even listening.
You don't know that.
I don't know that. You're right. Not a clue.
You don't know. Jimmy's a really good guy. Yeah. Really good guy. Your best 89 of all time. I don't. Let me double check to make sure that I'm not just saying this baselessly. Yeah, I don't have any honorable mentions for you. I've only got one.
What about O'Day Williams and Vincent Pryor? That's who Dan Jenkins gave honorable mentions to.
Well, hey, then you should trust Dan Jenkins.
I'm just saying.
Vincent Pryor was a defensive end early 90s, 91, 94. O'Day Williams was an end for the Frogs in 54, 56. Not to be confused with Day O, O'Day.
Right, correct.
Yes, two very different very circumstances. Different. Now try not to have that song stuck in your head.
Deo, Deo, you're welcome. Daylight come and the one go home. Y'all are all welcome.
Harry Belafonte is, you know, speaking of underrated individuals.
Okay,
right.
That's certainly a take.
What? You don't like Harry Belafonte?
I could not pick him out of a lineup. If he's in this room right now, I wouldn't know who that is. I've heard the name before, but I don't think I know.
You should watch the episode of the Muppet Show that he hosted.
Oh, that's.
You'll be overjoyed.
I never would have thought I would have heard those words,
dude. Today. And he sings a song in that episode. We come from the fire, living in the fire. Okay. Go back to the fire.
Okay, I know who this around. Is now. I think he was born in 1927.
Yeah, he's an old fellow right now.
He's 93, still kicking.
Yep, still just kicking back. Living easy.
I mean, he didn't retire till 03. That means he retired when he was like 80.
Hey,
Good for him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Do the thing.
Back to our number.
Number 89.
Speaking of numbers in the 80s and 90s, here you go.
Yes. So, number 89, Kyle Clifton. He was a linebacker for the Frogs in from 81 to 83, just before that Blue Bonnet Bowl season. He just missed it. But he was a beast back there at linebacker. And he has some numbers that are a little reminiscent of, you know, more recent TCU mm-hmm. linebackers. He had one game where he had 30 tackles in a game. I mean, oh boy.
That's absurd. That's absurd. I bet he was sore the next day.
Yes. Or at least he made some other people sore.
Someone else was more sore. I'm trying to see how many tackles. I want to see how many tackles Summers had in that Baylor game in 2015.
Well, I feel like Garrett Wallow, your boy Garrett Wallow's had some games where he had absurd number of tackles in a single game.
But I'm trying to remember. I feel like there was a wild number of tackles somebody had in that Baylor game in 2015, the rain game.
Yeah,
for the longest time, had some monster games.
For the longest time, he had the single season record for tackles at 189 in a season, and you know. He was he finished his career 280 tackles, so a good bit shy of the 300 plus that Trayvon Howard and Ty Summers have since shattered.
Summers had 23 in that Baylor game, by the way.
Nice. Yeah. Was that the 2015 game?
Yeah, as a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, man, like, come on now. Kyle Clifton had 3 interceptions in his career and 1 sack, so he was really just that guy that he was. You know, not making havoc in the backfield. He was just that second line of defense, what the linebacker traditionally was, where it's like, okay, they've blown a hole in the line. Now what happens? Oh, my God, Kyle Clifton out of nowhere.
From the top rope.
So, yeah, Kyle Clifton was doing RKOs before it was popular. Then you can take that to the bank. You heard it here first on the Purple Mist podcast. Number 90. Again, a lot of really great number 90s.
A lot of good 90s.
In recent years.
Yep.
All in recent years. Terrell Lathan, ringing any bells?
Yeah.
Solid defensive tackle for the Frogs. Yes, absolutely. Or defensive end. Jared Kessler. Not enough love is given to Jared Kessler.
Another underappreciated guy.
Dude, so underappreciated. That guy is a defensive tackle. His senior year was 2005 for TCU. Alito product, if I remember correctly.
I think so.
And the thing I remember most about him, because I got to meet him... I guess it was in 2006. I got to meet him. I think he was going to the same church as me briefly. But he played the Houston Bowl on a torn ACL.
Wow.
He's just like, nope, this is my last game. I'm going to do it.
Yep.
And by God, he did it. And he had a great game alongside Zarnell Fitch. I mean, he was just a beast in the middle of the defensive line. Another defensive lineman, Stanley Maponga.
Maponga punch.
Yes, yep. Maponga punch, yes. My favorite player on my beloved Seattle Dragons of the XFL.
Easily.
Yes.
Was it down to him and Cole Hunt? Wasn't that who Cole Hunt was playing for?
No, he was playing for the St. Louis or Memphis. Or it was some Midwest.
St. Louis Battlehawks, I think.
Yeah, St. Louis, for sure.
As if I don't know.
I couldn't remember. I could see their uniforms, but I couldn't remember what town they were from.
Yeah.
But yeah, Stanley Maponga, I mean, he Rose Bowl defensive end.
Yeah.
Went on to play 2011, 2012. Yeah, he was a beast and still playing
for the Falcons and Giants for a hot minute.
Yes, absolutely. But your best number 90.
Easily.
Yeah, say it for us, Billy.
Ross Blacklock.
Yes.
Houston Texan defensive tackle, Ross Blacklock.
Yes, and man, a physical specimen in every sense.
He's a monster. Like, he's gotten. And I was real nervous after, because 2018 he missed the whole year with the Achilles. I was like, oh, I don't know about him coming back. And he started off a little slow in 2019, but finished really strong. And then by the time we saw him in the combine, it looked like he had lost like 20 pounds. It was just a freak of nature. And I keep saying it. He looks like he could be Aaron Donald.
He's got such Aaron Donald energy.
Very Aaron Donald vibes. So. Aaron Donald vibes. But he might be he might be taller than Aaron Donald.
Yeah, he's a big human being. Because
he looks skinnier, but he's also like Aaron Donald, 6'1", 285. Blacklock, 6'4", 305. This is on GoFrogs. He's probably a little less than that now.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think he's going to – we said it a lot. I think he's going to have the longest career of all the players that got drafted this year.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And, you know, with defensive tackles – it's kind of like offensive linemen. It can be easy to get into the weeds and be like, oh, you know, his stats aren't blowing me away. Yeah. But it's the things that he's doing that, as, you know, basically the cornerstone for the entire rest of the defense that doesn't get noticed, that makes him so valuable.
I mean, he was a freshman All-American. That's how good he was, like, in 17. It just stinks we only got to see him for 2 years.
Yeah, it really does.
But in 17, he was an absolute force as a true freshman. And then 19... was started off slow because we didn't see him at all in 2018. 2019 was fantastic. And it does kind of bum me out. The last play he got to play, he got kicked out on.
Yeah, man.
That's a real bummer. Because at the time we were looking at hopefully going to a bowl game. We're leading that game for a while. And then he gets targeting and then they end up losing. And it's like, oh my God. So stinks had to go out like that. But yeah.
We began the podcast talking about a very fun West Virginia game. And now we're talking about
a very sad West Virginia game. But shout out Ross Blacklock. Definitely the best 90 of all time. Just an absolute phenomenal player. He's going to be a monster in the NFL.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself.
There you go. That's why I do this. He's the best.
He's the best around. Nothing's ever going to bring him down.
Bears. All right. Twitter questions. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Fernando Coronado Jr., how many players will be drafted in the 2021 draft from TCU?
Hoy, well, probably not many because we're not going to have many seniors.
No, I think it's Wallow and Bethley.
Yeah. Well, I think both of them could be drafted if they have the years that they're capable of. Well, Wallow will probably be a late round pick.
I think he'll be mid, and Bethley could be earlier, could be second, third, and I think Wallow probably third or fourth.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Bethley maybe like third round. Wallow, I was thinking maybe like fifth, sixth, just because people are going to see him. They're going to say, oh, he's too small to play linebacker. We'll have to transition him to safety. And there may be like, you know, scouts may be thinking like questions about him. Like, okay, he's obviously athletic, but how will he transition? And oh, he hasn't played safety since like his freshman year. And, you know, but he's going to be a steal for somebody and he will get drafted. But yeah, two players.
I'm trying to think, it depends on how good, like, TJ Storman is. He's a grad transfer lineman.
That's true.
Maybe, like, Kellen Hollins is a senior. Maybe he has a monster year at guard.
There you go, yeah.
But I don't necessarily think those will be drafted, but those names to keep an eye on.
Yeah, they could be.
Mary go early?
Oh, God, I hope not.
I hope not, too, but I'm just saying the only other possibilities are, the sure things, I think, are Wallow and Bethley.
Yeah.
And then, if Mathis goes early.
How old is Noah Daniels? Is he going to be a junior?
Ooh, I think he's a junior by eligibility, but I think he's been here long enough where he could go if he wants to. But I kind of don't see that either. You only have 1 year on tape.
Yeah, it's not enough to impress.
I wouldn't think so.
2021!
What do we have to do to get back to dominance? Offense. Yes. Because the defense is still best in the Big 12, and,
yeah.
and GP's still ahead of the game when it comes to defense. The offense got to take a step forward.
I mean,
and it seems like they're addressing it and trying to.
And here's the thing, like, you can get caught up in all the minutia and, like, you know, situational play calling here and there, but realistically, we're not that far off. We lost six of those seven games by one score.
Yep.
We are not that far off.
No, I mean, you should have beat West Virginia. You should have beat Baylor. You could have had Oklahoma State. They were both. Neither team wanted to win that one.
Yeah,
like it was.
We went through the shouldas and couldas a few weeks back.
Yeah, I feel like we do this every week.
Yeah,
but yeah, they're very close. This year could easily be an 8-10 win season. And then the 2021, like we said, we're putting all
our eggs in the basket. Katie, bar the door, baby.
Yeah, we're putting all our eggs in the basket. why do so many people underrate Coach P?
That's a good freaking question.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I think about that. He's been the same place for 20 years, and it just kind of gets taken for granted at this point. And TCU didn't have a good year last year. If this year they come in, they come out of nowhere, they win 10 games, when they're ranked in the top 15, they win the Alamo Bowl again or whatever, he'll be back in that conversation of being a top five coach in the country. Mm-hmm. But it's very much based on what have you done for me lately. And last year wasn't as good a year as it could have been, although I think it was a great coaching year by GP.
Oh, yeah.
I think 15 was still his best coaching year of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Considering all the injuries they went through in 2015 to still be that good and win all those games and win the Alamo Bowl. But I mean, 2017, they were in the Big 12 title game. It's not like they've been chopped liver all these years.
Yeah.
It's just bad. Last year was bad. This year will be better, and then people will be like back on the Coach P. He just got his first five-star recruit.
Yeah.
He just got his first five-star recruit, guys.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's honestly quite baseless. I mean, dude has a statue on campus for a very good reason. He's good at what he does. He built TCU essentially from the ground up. I mean, Franchione kind of gave him a little foundation there, but you know, I mean, he's very, very good at what he does. Yeah, he deserves our trust.
Yeah, he's got the most wins at their current school and like in the country.
Well, oh yeah, at his current school. Yeah, because when Mac Brown came out of retirement,
and Saban has more too.
Yeah,
but I mean, like him and Saban are the only people with 150 plus wins in the last 15 years or whatever it is, some crazy stat like that.
Yeah.
So just, I think in this circle, he's not underrated. I think nationally, it just comes back to what he did last year, what the team did last year. Team underperformed.
Well, and I think nationally, I mean, I think there's just there's just so much favoritism toward blue bloods and big schools and the big money makers. And, you know, I think that at the end of the day, if I'm a writer at Sports Illustrated and I put Coach P at number 12 on some coaching list, I'm like, you know what? They're going to be three TCU fans mad at me. What do I care?
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
So I think that's a lot of that.
I agree.
Incorrect attitude.
I agree with that. And then last question from the TCU grounds crew.
Ah.
What is your favorite green space on campus? Choose wildly.
Choose wisely? Choose
wisely. Not and wildly. Why not? Go loco.
Favorite green space. I mean, Amon Carter Stadium?
It's either that or Lupton.
Yeah.
As I hinted at earlier, missing baseball, I love to be watching games at Lupton right now. I guess they wouldn't be at Lupton anymore, but
there's so many great green spaces, to be real with you. I mean, even like just the Commons. Like when the Commons is all green and it's not a billion degrees, that's a beautiful place to hang out.
My first couple years when I was living in Clark, the Clark Lawn.
Yeah.
Great place to be.
And honestly, I mean, I got a lot of great memories on the football practice field.
Well, yeah.
And that's a very well taken care of field as well. That gets just beaten to a pulp, you know, day in and day out. And it's just always green and lush and wonderful.
And this is another, we talk about people being underappreciated.
Oh, yes.
The grounds crew is, I think at TCU maybe appreciated more than at most places, but grounds crews in general, underappreciated, especially at TCU. And I go back to all the years where it seemed like every year TCU's hosting a regional and it's raining.
Yep.
Every year without fail. Like, all right, cool, we'll be ready to go by tomorrow at 7:30. It always blows my mind how exact they are at how quickly they can get things done, and the fact that torrential downpour, then suddenly, oh yeah, we're playing baseball and again in like an hour. Crazy.
Yeah, it's insane.
Crazy how good a job they do.
Yeah, extremely good at what they do. And man, that I need that inspiration because I'm fixing to have to go mow my lawn as soon as we get done.
Oh, you're doing that? So you're going to do that right about now, huh?
Yeah. Right about now.
Right about now. You're going to go... mow your lawn. So enjoy that today. I couldn't think of the word mow for whatever reason. Clint, promote something.
Follow me on Twitter at Clint_Foster55. Special thanks to Josh Boyce for jumping on with us. Man, we've had a good run of interviews here for this for this number series. I'm happy about that.
One more week. So
1 week more.
There you go. At Billy Wessels, at @TC_Rivals, at @Scoop_It on Instagram. I guess I'll talk to y'all guys sometime next week.
Yep, next week.
Keep voting in our polls and enjoy yourselves.
Enjoy life.
Take a step back, as someone wise once said.
Yeah, take a step back.
Talk to y'all next week.